Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.
Into sports.
20 yards out. Urch to shoot. Don't shoot. Oh, what a goal from Fabinho. Wow.
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologizes to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
You're very welcome along. So, that was pretty grim, wasn't it? It's hard to know where to start. It was very grim, especially grim if you're a Munster fan and a Republic of Ireland fan. We'll have Richard Dunn and Dan McDonald with us. We'll play some Stephen Kenny's press conference today ahead of the game against Qatar tomorrow. And then on the Pro 14 final, Keith Wood's going to be with us after 8 o'clock. Toulouse or Ivan Thomond on Saturday. We have that game live for you. We also have live coverage of Leinster against Toulon on the Friday as well. 53106 is the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. Richard McCormick, hello.
Joe, how are you?
Very well. Adrian Barry, hello. No joy. Your mouth's moving. We ain't hearing you. Richie, we'll talk about the football, myself and yourself, for a few moments. Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I've done my fair share at this stage. We've Dan McDonald on the way, Richard Dunn on the way, 7:30. Talked yesterday to David Myler, Kevin Kilbane. We had David Snaid. We had Gary Breen. It turns out talking about it a lot doesn't make it better. That's what I found. I don't want to talk about it much anymore because the bottom line, whether you're it's all Stephen Kenny's fault, it's not working out, this kind of football doesn't suit us, or whether you're the players just aren't good enough, there's only so much Stephen Kenny can do, or whether you're this is going to take 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, who knows how long. None of those bottom lines are great. There's not much solace to be taken.
You're talking about 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. I would say that to get where a lot of people who've been speaking this weekend want to go, or at least want the Ireland side to be, it's going to actually take decades. And that's just being realistic about it, because the fact remains the football in this country is still in somewhat of a state of neglect and has been for decades. We've been professional since the 1930s and yet still find ourselves reliant on developing our players in an ever globalizing English league, and the avenues for players to do that are kind of narrowing as every year passes. And we saw evidence of that just this past Saturday. I mean, I was going through the numbers just for comparison's sake. You know, you can throw up old qualifications, be it the 2002 World Cup or I did Euro 2012, just doing a quick tot of the squads. In 2002, there were 7 members of that squad playing outside the top flight, and among them were Kenny Cunningham, Richard Dunn, Stephen Reid, and a couple others. Kenny Cunningham, I might have mentioned there too. 2012, to bring it more recent, again, 7 players playing outside the top flight. And on Saturday, we only had 10 players in the squad of 23, the matchday squad of 23, playing their trade in top flight football. And that is going to keep getting narrower and smaller and smaller as the years go on, unless there is a concerted effort made starting yesterday to try and develop players to a better level here, because the excuses don't really wash anymore. We're a developed country. There are countries that in economic terms are far poorer than us that are developing higher quality, higher caliber players at, you know, comparable ages. There's no ignoring the fact that the result on Saturday was bad and we need to do better, and the performance was bad and we need to do better. But it will become an increasingly frequent thing, these kind of results, these kind of quote unquote shock results, when they shouldn't really be shocks considering the rankings and the seedings and all that. They're going to become more and more regular, and we better get used to it, unfortunately.
Yeah. Adrian?
I think it might be better when I'm muted, when I've muted myself, John.
I say that all the time about you.
Yeah, no. I was talking to somebody earlier on about the different conversation we'd have been having today if Grealish and Rice, for example, and we're not going down that road, right? But like, if they had declared for Ireland, we would absolutely been having a different conversation today, right? You'd have the urgency and the guile and the skill levels and all that stuff that we were missing from the weekend would have been there. We'd have got something out of it, whether it was just a draw or whatever. We probably would have won the game, and we'd have been having a very different conversation. We wouldn't have been having a conversation at all, in fact, about the structures of Irish football and the depth of that middle age group that we just don't have players in. So, you know, like the young talent that's coming in that hasn't yet hit its straps in terms of maturity and experience and all that sort of stuff. So maybe we've struck upon an opportunity here that we wouldn't have had otherwise, and that it's an opportunity for us to look at all those things that Richie's talking about in terms of the structures around Irish football that have been neglected for decades, and that could have been papered over by us, like, grimly dragging out a 1-1 draw or nil all draw against Luxembourg or whatever, or beating them. So maybe there is just an opportunity now for us to start to look at that. Like, the obvious offshoot out of that is that we kind of would need to do something about it. But if we were to, it'd be a good outcome.
There's so many problems in regard to that, like, because I think we're all in agreement where we want to go and where we should be. But in terms of coaching and getting people up to standard, and just in terms of coaching, is a very, very difficult process. I mean, you only have to look at the problems that we've had, even pandemic aside, trying to get people qualified on UEFA pro licenses in this country. And this isn't just a Dundalk situation. This is going back a few years now since that became the absolute base level requirements to compete in top leagues and in Europe. Like, to get people qualified in this country is a very long, laborious and expensive process. To get people up and coaching to a certain level in this country is a long process again. And to have underage structures in this country singing off the same hymn sheet is just impossible. And you can have as many, you know, people in charge of youth performance. You can have, you know, regional and development officers in charge of whatever, but there's not enough of them, and there's not enough of a structure around the Irish game to make their work meaningful and to channel, you know, the necessary amount of players up to the top level. And that's the problem that we're at. It's just the numbers aren't there in terms of available coaches, in terms of the money and the resources that are available to them. And that, like, we need to start, if football is to be taken seriously in this country, and this is at every level, from the international team to, you know, under 14s playing every Sunday, like, it needs to be treated like an industry. Like, I was reminded, like, big style. I remember watching a documentary about Irish music a couple of years ago, and they said that back in the 50s and 60s, there was no Irish music industry here to speak of. But now we do. Like, we've got a music industry here in terms of labels, in terms of studios, in terms of promoters, in terms of bookers, in terms of advertising, that's comparable with anywhere in the world. And that doesn't happen overnight. That happens through toil, and that happens through people gaining experience, and that happens through the right kind of investment. And similarly here, we have a lot of the raw materials, and we've had happy accidents now and again down through the years. Like, we've put on a decent gig here and there. You know, a couple of good acts have come to the country here and there. But having it on a consistent and a decent basis just has never been something in our wheelhouse. We live from paycheck to paycheck in terms of qualifying for tournaments. And they, as Adrian mentions, paper over a lot of cracks. But the money never filters down. And there was a special era of neglect after that 2002 World Cup that I mentioned. Things should have, you know, come through better than they had, and investments should have been made that weren't made. And there are questions there still to be answered, and people involved will probably never have to answer them. They'll never be available to answer them. But I think everybody can be in agreement that the idea that we should just be sailing through qualifying tournaments, or, you know, at least be competitive, it's just not realistic. The idea that we'd be qualifying for Qatar 2022, I hate to break it to anybody, just in terms of the basic mathematics, was a fantasy. Like, finishing second in the group, you know, may have been, you know, something that was really, really achievable, but was something that was difficult to achieve. But getting beyond that, you've got playoffs, you've got whatever. There's only 13 teams getting out of Europe. There's going to be a lot more disappointed teams than us by the time qualifiers are over.
For me, on that point, like, I think that no matter, even if we got our stuff together, that we'd still be looking at qualifying at what? Like, even if we were at all those structures in place, we're looking at qualifying, like, given the size of our nation. I know that there are some other counter examples of that, but typically you'd be looking to qualify for one every four, maybe one every five tournaments, something like that.
European championships can be a bit easier because of the numbers that are involved now. But if you're talking about 13 teams from across Europe going to a World Cup, like for a country level of Ireland, and there'd be more like us. That's a hell of an ask to try and get to a World Cup now. And it's not UEFA's fault, it's not FIFA's fault, it's not our fault. That's not our fault. That's just the realism of expanding tournaments and, you know, countries fracturing and all that kind of stuff. But coaching is the thing. And coaching is something that needs to be, as I say, implemented yesterday. Otherwise, we're going to keep having this conversation. Like, I'm having these conversations after the Cyprus game and after, you know, Euro 2012 and all that kind of stuff. They'll keep popping up because the questions have never properly been addressed.
Mm. Yeah, it's all very grim, isn't it? And you're not even entirely sure that what's happening now is along the right tracks either. Like, it was interesting, Brian Kerr, Virgin, was making the point that we're now offloading development to the League of Ireland clubs, and as he said, they don't have a pot to pee in. So you wonder, are we on the right track even now? And it was just a quirk of geography and luck that we never had to be self-sufficient for a very long time, because English clubs took our best and moulded them and gave them opportunities in the top level, and we went from there and we got away with that for a long time. And I guess bad timing that the John Delaney era has coincided with English clubs, you know, becoming global meritocracies as opposed to just the best of Britain and Ireland. And, you know, that timing has really caught us on the hop, and now we're playing catch up. And I really hope we're on the right track now, because depending on who you talk to, and the football family is not one that tends to agree on much, we could be doing things absolutely in a really promising way, or actually we're making another mess for the next 10, 15 years, and there'll be more pieces written in 10 years about how this plan to really get the League of Ireland clubs to develop players was a bad idea, and the National League idea didn't quite work out. And, you know, we really do have to get our act together. I was reading Miguel Delaney's piece from 6-7 years ago over the weekend, and I remember talking to him about it at the time, but like, there was a pretty shrewd judge. I don't think he named, but he'd been around the block and called Ireland's system the most dysfunctional in Europe. The most dysfunctional he'd seen in Europe. And at that stage, there was a quote from an FAI employee saying, yeah, look, we really do need to sort out a pyramid structure whereby if you're a talented player, there's not like gaps and ceilings and where do I go next at certain ages. And the line from the FAI employee at the time was, why bother? It's a political nightmare. So that's 6 years ago. So, you know, the emerging generation we have now, they were in their formative years then. And so it's all come home to roost in a horrible way. And we did get along with it, away with it for so long. I think 2012 actually is about the last time a generation had got away with being underserved by the FAI. Mm. Because 2012 had Robbie Keane, it had Duff, it had Whelan, who's a really good player. I don't care what anyone says, Premier League player for a long time. Keith Andrews, player of the tournament then, Premier League player then. Kevin Doyle, Shane Long, Shay Given, Darren Gibson was at Everton then, couldn't get a starting place for Ireland. James McLean, that was his breakout season. McGeady was really good then, started 11 Euro qualifiers then. John O'Shea, 5 Premier League medals. Jonathan Walters, Stephen Hunt, Wes Hoolan and Seamus Coleman weren't even in the squad in 12. You compare that to now, it's just a different stratosphere. Like, we're going backwards.
They're potted through the Championship in League One, as I alluded to earlier. But that brings me to another conversation point that's been brought up over the course of the last 48 hours, especially after the Luxembourg game, which is that we don't have the players to play a certain type of football, and that the people that were calling for Trapattoni and O'Neill to play, you know, more attractive football during their time in charge, like, they're being proved wrong now. That's not the case. There's still a case to be made that, you know, those squads should have included a Wes Hoolahan, and that those players 100%. That you rattled off there were capable of playing a better brand of football than was asked of them at the time. That's something that I don't think you can argue with.
In a perverse way, it could be interesting to watch Stephen Kenny manage that 2012 batch and let Trapp guide this current batch. You know, like, that's being blunt about it. It's obviously a bit of an exaggeration to say that.
Do you know, it's funny because, like, and I definitely am in the category that, like, you want to watch the type of football that Stephen Kenny has to play, let's put it that way. But the conversations we're having now weren't afforded, obviously, to his predecessor. That's you know, how intrinsically linked one-off results or a series of results granted at national level can be with the type of catastrophic conversation that we're having here. I found that interesting. Look at it. It's
as in you think O'Neill and Keane and Mick got way more stick.
Well, I think that they were probably suffering from a lot of the outcome was for a lot of the same reasons. Okay, like the players weren't coming through.
Yeah.
Now, you could, I think, easily argue that some of those managers might have been playing that style of football no matter who they had, and sort of refused to go down that route. But even like you listen to Roy Keane's comments over the last, and another news round goes by and we have to mention his name, over the last 24 hours about this being a low ebb for Irish football, and you can read between the lines of what he's saying about his own term as as assistant coach there, you know, that like, look, we don't have the players, why are we trying to play this football? That's what he's saying. It was an interesting insight into the logic of the last couple of years, I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, and Keane sometimes really suits those shorter formats as opposed to, I don't, you know, let's talk about it for an hour. Keane's almost better going, we don't really need to talk about this for an hour, it's pretty damn simple, players aren't good enough, that's my ITV contribution in Ireland, that's all you need to know. You know, it's kind of hard to argue with them after that performance in some ways. We should start the news round on Off the Ball and News Talk with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made it what matters. There's the good news is there's one more game to go. God, I'd give anything to be talking about how rubbish Paul Pogba is today. I really would.
Matt Doherty and Enda Stevens are going to miss tomorrow night's friendly with Qatar. Doherty was withdrawn at halftime of Saturday's World Cup qualifier defeat to Luxembourg, while Stevens was assessed after that game, and it was decided the Sheffield United wingback would not travel to Debrecen. It was confirmed today that the Republic of Ireland will face Hungary and Andorra in June as part of a 9-day camp in Spain. Manager Stephen Kenny said today that he will take criticism of Saturday night's result on the chin and remains determined to prove himself as manager. He received the backing of independent FAI chair Roy Barrett at yesterday's FAI EGM, and Kenny says better days are around the corner.
Very determined that we will improve and get it right. We've just had a real kick in the teeth losing to Luxembourg, and I understand because of World Cup points are so sought after and hard earned that is it. I'm not going to try to you know, it'd be too easy for me to say that I would have, you know, long term success with this, but what I will say is that all of those players coming through, a lot of them are very talented. Some suggestions of some of them, they'll all end back playing in Ireland, and they're not that talented. All those players that have come in, Darryl O'Shea, Jason Knight, Jason Malumbi, Aaron Connolly, Cuivin Kelleher, Gavin Bazunu, and all of those players, they will all have great, good careers at the top level. They are going to be good players for Ireland in the future, and they are talented players, and you will see them blossom. And other players like Troy Parrott as well, and, you know, players that I haven't even mentioned, the Adam Oyd is young Nathan, and I think we've got a whole lot of players coming through, and I think that's a real positive in relation to. But I do think it's not just long term. I think we've been good, and we can be good in this campaign. We were very good against Serbia. We just let ourselves down by not capitalising on the situations that we had the other night against Luxembourg, and not been creative in the areas that we could have been, and that's really hurt us.
We're still trying to confirm if he was talking about Nathan Murphy there, that young Nathan, but we'll bring you confirmation as soon as we get word. Look, that is the cause for optimism, Adrian, that the likes of Josh Cullen and Jason Knight, whose performances have been criticised, you know, in a constructive way, I thought, by the likes of Kev yesterday and David Myler, pointing out where they were playing was too deep and different things like that. They'll all benefit massively from this. Darryl O'Shea will benefit. The likes of Cuivin Kelleher will come back. Aaron Connolly will get his fitness, hopefully, and come back. And Malumbi will start playing, hopefully, first-team football. And that, yeah, this is just a blooding of those players. And in 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, then you've got a really good group who've lots of experience by their mid to early 20s and will be all the better for it. And Michael O'Neill lost his first 17 games as Northern Ireland manager, and I was watching his interview, or reading back an interview about that recently, just to get a sense of what he felt was going on then. And, you know, they drew to Luxembourg at home and drew with Azerbaijan and were fifth in a six-team group and eventually dropped down to 129th in the world. But under O'Neill then turned it around and got up to 25th in the world, which is remarkable when you think of it. And he said there was such an anxiety across those 17 games. You know, there's such a pressure. There's a sense things aren't going well. The pressure builds. It gets harder, it gets harder, it gets harder. And then it's very hard to perform well. I mean, you could sense that anxiety in the team on Saturday as the match went on. And maybe that explains why the performance was so poor. And you just hope they all benefit from it, as Stephen Kenny talked about there. And in 2, 3, 4 years, it's been worth the growing pains. And if this is rock bottom, it's worth it. That's the optimistic view.
Yeah, I think that's it's also a fair enough point of view. I think that you just hope that the players keep the faith. That's it. Like that they don't internally, and like you listen to Seamus Coleman after the game talking about the players being embarrassed by it and wanting to take it on the chin. He certainly wasn't, and nor would he, given the nature of the man, but looking to throw the manager under the bus. You just hope that the players obviously continue to buy into that being the way to play football. Like at some point, they're the same as us, where they start looking at it going, well, geez, if we'd gone 4-4-2 there now and like tweaked a few things, we think we might have got something out of the game. I'm sure those conversations between some players anyway will have been happening after the thing. But like, I don't know. We were here and I was asking the question this day last week if what we saw from the Irish rugby team was real in its quality. And I suppose we're asking maybe the inverse of that this week, if it was real in its how brutal it was after what we saw with Serbia. And we're all just keeping our fingers crossed that that wasn't us.
I'll give you a flavour text and then we might move on and bring people the rest of the news. Richard Dunn's on the way in about 10 minutes time. Joe, there have to be questions on Stephen Kenny and his management team. It's his job to make the team better. 10 games, no wins against average other sides. Success in the League of Ireland, not a benchmark for international management. Wanting to play attractive football is not an excuse for terrible results. Then John and Rathmines. Lads, here's a question. We've qualified for six. That's six major tournaments in 50 odd. Why do we think we're entitled to qualify for them when it's never been common for us to do so? The football public are far too ambitious, says Des in Sligo. We have a semi-professional league. We have to compete with a professional rugby setup that's well supported by corporate Ireland and the media. Plus, the elephant in the room is the GAA, an institution that for nearly a century drained Irish football of any potential. Guys, playing summer soccer at youth level is a big one. Better pitches, better weather to do proper training and preparation. We see the benefits here in Mayo, says Mike in Westport. And somebody says, come on, Malloy, criticise the Dubs. Football's been ruined by Dublin coaches. Hey, listen, everything's up for grabs. Maybe.
Make us feel better about ourselves. Yeah.
Yeah, so there we go. Look, a lot of people saying, hang on, who do we think we are? Who do we think we are? So let's park that for a few minutes. JJ Hanrahan is off to France.
He certainly is. Clermont confirming the signing of Hanrahan today. The out-half will leave Munster at the end of this season, having agreed a one-year deal at the Stade Marcel Michelin with the option of a second. Hanrahan is going to provide cover and competition for Camille Lopez there. He scored 803 points for Munster in 150 games. 24 of those points came in a win over his future employers back in December. Meanwhile, Darren Sweetenham is heading for France sooner than Hanrahan. Munster have agreed to end his contract early, allowing Sweetenham to join Ronan O'Gara's La Rochelle as a medical joker. And one other Munster-related line gone up on the website there as well on otbsports.com in the past half hour. London Irish linked with a move for Simon Zeebo. He is out of contract at the end of the season at Racing 92.
Yeah, we'll talk to Keith about all that and about Munster at the weekend. It was interesting. Munster were pretty upfront about JJ Hanrahan. They just said this is part of the COVID crunch. The finances aren't there. Van Graan was pretty upfront about that. So Hanrahan goes off to Clermont. Now, Ian McKinley.
Yeah, former Leinster at half Ian McKinley announcing his second retirement from playing rugby today. Second time has mentioned that he's retired from the game following a horror eye injury that he suffered at the age of 21 back in 2011. The Leinster Academy graduate moved to Italy to coach rugby before becoming the first player in the world to use specially designed rugby goggles. McKinley then signed with Benetton and qualified to play for Italy as part of the residency rules, making his debut against Fiji in 2017, and he went on to win 9 caps for his adopted country.
We probably underestimate a touch what Ian McKinley managed to do, Adrian. I mean, the bravery to come back was phenomenal, and you know, doctors warned him of the consequences and he pushed ahead and did it anyway after a stint away, and then obviously the goggles made things a bit safer for him, and ultimately, I mean, got to, for us to do the basics in life suddenly without sight in one eye when we've had it for most of our lives. That peripheral vision would be difficult to play out half at international level. It's absolutely extraordinary. So, I mean, what he did was just absolutely exceptional. Probably still doesn't get the credit he deserves for it.
With some of those players that have tended to disappear off the Irish radar a little bit, you keep an ear out and an eye out for what respected voices in the game are saying about them in whatever sport it might be. And there's some comments from Conor O'Shea that really stick out in my mind from his time with Italy and when Ian McKinley was trying to break in, and with the respect with which Conor O'Shea, who obviously has a huge footing in the game, spoke about Ian McKinley and the fight in him to get into the team. And O'Shea was saying, saying, listen, I ain't doing this guy any favours. You know, he'd been left out of match day 23s around that time and had to really fight tooth and nail to get into the team. So yeah, listen, total respect. I presume he's gone off to pursue a career in John Molloy body double, is that?
I presume so. I mean, look, I mean, he's perfected the art, really. So Rich, one last story, I'm being told we're out of time. Last one.
Richie Murphy appointed the new Ireland Rugby Under-20s head coach. He replaces Kieran Campbell, who surprisingly stepped down last week after just a few months in charge. Murphy will keep his role as skills and kicking coach with the Ireland senior squad. Ireland's delayed and truncated Six Nations campaign at Under-20 level gets underway in June.
Okay, very good. Fellas, thank you. As ever, Adrian, Richie, cheers, guys.
Cheers.
We've got Richard Dunn with us next.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.